Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We put a lot into these 3 hours. Jay Pribman is going to join us, the third board member this morning of the Eddie Gregson Foundation. Jay, good morning.
Good morning. Not on the board, but a long time and enthusiastic supporter of a great organization. Glad you're highlighting it, and glad you got Janine on earlier. She does an amazing job with the Gregson Foundation.
And, you know, a fascinating personality, too, and has always been, you don't have to worry about where you stand with Janine Sahadi. She's a square shooter, as they say.
Yes, she is. She's got a good heart when it comes to the racetrack. Believe me, she does a lot for people there. I mean, I know people are realizing it now because of the crisis, but you know, the work that she does year-round for the Gregson Foundation is, I mean, it's a year-round endeavor, puts on a great fundraiser every year for it, and she's very involved at Del Mar, both meets there and helping out with horses relations, because everybody knows her, you know, and she
yes.
does get things done, so it's just, she really works her butt off.
Well, I hadn't, obviously had not had a chance to talk to her in way too long, and you know, her, for those that aren't familiar, you want to go to Equibase and look up the litany of stake winners that she had, and you know, not from a big base of starters either, Jay. And she was good with all kinds of horses, young, old, long, short, dirt, grass, didn't matter.
Oh, no question. I mean, two breeders, back to back Breeders' Cup sprint winners, San Diego Derby win. I mean, on and on and on. She had a tremendous training career, and like you said, could train any kind of horse too. So yeah, she knows what she's doing.
Well, Jay, we've got more to talk about than we might have thought we would, and that includes a 3-year-old stake at Oak Lawn that in another life would have been the Arkansas Derby. We've got any number of allowance and maiden races. We don't necessarily talk about them, but you got to at least be aware of them right now. And then the work that you've been doing, you know, just sort of monitoring the overall Derby atmosphere and some of the machinations that are going on behind the scenes. In addition, you wrote a piece, and in fact, I was thrilled to be included about the status of things industry-wide and the notoriety that the two smaller tracks are getting right now in Fawner and Will Rogers. That was a great piece.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I appreciate it. Appreciate your help with it. Yeah, our office thought it was, I had pitched them on a slightly more narrow story, and the editors came back and said, why don't you go a little wider with this? And we figured out a couple ways to incorporate different elements into the story, which included the significantly increased business at Will Rogers and Fawner owing to what's going on, and then also kind of how it impacts media and how the sport's being covered. And we thought, since you do, you know, 3 hours a day, 5 days a week, and that the content has certainly changed owing to what's going on, that getting your perspective on all this would be worthwhile. So sort of threw all that into a big soup bowl and hoped it turned out all right.
It did. It absolutely did. And you talked to John Leese at Will Rogers and to Chris Katulak at Fawner. You know, Chris scored, I can see by the coverage, in fact, Chris scored a lot of points with his immediate, I mean, it was, that DQ, the ink wasn't dry on the report, and he had reached out to me, said, can I come on the show tomorrow and explain and you know, kind of suss out the DQ, and that openness was really well received.
we're good. I'm glad. I'm glad it was. It was obviously an extremely controversial call, and thought it was good to have someone try and be as proactive as possible to try and present their side of it and how how it was in their minds adjudicated.
Turn the attention, Jay, to what's happening behind the scenes when it comes to the September Derby, and then we can morph into this Oaklawn stake. There's a lot of work that needs to be done, obviously, to figure out where the point races are gonna manifest themselves. And the problem is, until there's some sense of a schedule and some normality to when ovals are going to start running, it the thing feels really tough to put your hands around.
Well, it is. I mean, obviously, other than the race tomorrow, the Oaklawn Stakes, and then the Arkansas Derby in 3 weeks, there's really no, at the moment, known races. I mean, there's things that are on the schedule, obviously, even, including the Belmont Stakes still is, where it's been. But, all of those things are potentially aspirational at this point. Don't know when Santa Anita's going to start up. Don't know for sure when New York's going to start up. Don't know yet exactly when Kentucky's going to start back up. So trainers are having to decide whether to maybe push on for a known thing like the race tomorrow or the Arkansas Derby. And as you know, those two races were flip-flopped a few weeks ago. Oaklawn decided to move the Arkansas Derby back and run it on what would have been Kentucky Derby Day, May the 2nd, and that's when the Oaklawn Stakes was going to be run initially, and so they just flip-flopped those two races. So trainers are trying to figure out whether they should push on and run tomorrow and or in 3 weeks, and the Arkansas Derby right now is the last of the known point-scoring races. We know that there will be some additional ones announced, but as you said, until there's more certainty as to when racing is going to resume and what and whether stakes that were initially scheduled in June or July or August are going to stay in those spots or get moved, everybody's kind of flying a little bit blind and just having to take it day by day. So specific to this week, I wrote about, for instance, Gouverneur Morris, who just ran in the Florida Derby. They initially were going to give him a break, and then they were like, well, he came out of the race so well, we ought to at least consider the Arkansas Derby, and that's on their docket right now. Modernist, who won a division of the Risen Star and then ran third most recently in the Louisiana Derby, he had been under consideration for the race, but they decided not to go, and they're just going to keep him in a holding pattern and then press on when things are known. And Sully Vellante had been pointed to the Arkansas Derby, but because of the quarantine restrictions that are in place in Florida that the Strana Group has put up regarding either horses that ship out and then they come back to either Gulfstream or Palm Meadows or Gulfstream West, if they're based there, they have to go into quarantine not at any of those facilities for 14 days. And Biancone doesn't really want to do that with Sole Volante, so they're most likely going to pass the race unless that policy changes between now and when they'd have to leave to go to the Arkansas Derby. And a lot of these things, Steve, are based on, I think, what not always, but in many cases, where horses stand on the points list. If you have sufficient amount of points, you don't really need the urgency to press on. If you need a little more, here's a spot that if you're doing well, why not? And that's not a blanket statement, because obviously, for instance, with Nadal and Charlatan, Nadal won the Rebel, but he's always had been ticketed for the Arkansas Derby and is still going back. But Charlatan's going to go to the Arkansas Derby. Authentic, though, who was being pointed for the Santa Anita Derby and already had won the San Felipe, he's going to be put on hold for the moment and regroup for hopefully races in June, July, and August leading up to the now September 5 Derby. So that's a long-winded but overall view of kind of where some of the leading horses stand, and there's, you know, there's more, but that's those are the ones I wrote about in the story this week.
And, you know, one thing, Jay, that has really kind of faded from the rumor mill is what the Preakness and what MJC is going to do. Because they're initially, after Churchill's, you know, specific placement for Saturday of September, there initially had been quite a bit of nattering that the Preakness would follow 2 weeks later, and that seems to have died down. I also was asking Alan Foreman yesterday, in fact, and there's very little feel for where things stand. New York is basically, you know, in a holding pattern, but the Preakness portion of this equation feels a little mysterious right now.
Well, to a point, I mean, the governor's office has already announced that the race is going to be postponed, and even the other day, MJC said that some of that infield entertainment is off for
right.
this year. So, you know, they're going to move the race. They're not going to be running. The question is, when are they going to move the race to? So that's where things stand. And a lot of it has to do with what dates they are open. I'm sure a lot of it has to do with getting TV slots, to put the race on. So those are some of the aspects of it. And then as far as, New York goes, I'm sure in a perfect world, they'd love to be running on Belmont Day, but the original Belmont Day, I should say, and whether that can be done is certainly in jeopardy. And if they can't, then the question is, well, when do they move it to? And if you move it to, there's all kinds of implications depending on when you would move the race to, because you've got obviously Saratoga not long after that. And if you move it to the fall, you're encroaching on the fall meet with all the big races that they would have there leading up to the Breeders' Cup. And, do you slot it only a few weeks out from the Breeders' Cup and potentially have hiccups regarding or encroach on races like the Jockey Club Gold Cup? So it's really a tough, an unprecedented situation for everybody, and that's just one aspect of it. But the bottom line is, and I think this is what everybody needs to fully understand, every plan that everybody wants to have and everything that everybody hopes to have, none of it's going to matter until the authorities say, okay, you can go back to running again, and here's when you can go back to running again. And once you know that, then things can start to happen. But until that happens, everything's just a complete guess.
Well, do we want to take a guess at this group tomorrow in the Oaklawn Stakes?
Sure.
What do you think?
Well, it's a good race for horses that are trying to move on towards the Derby and towards the Arkansas Derby. There's no points towards the Derby for this race, but it's a good stepping stone towards the Arkansas Derby at the track and distance at which the Arkansas Derby is going to be run in 3 weeks. I thought Basin's comeback race was a lot better than looked. He had been off for more than 6 months. It was his first time around two turns, and I didn't think he had the cleanest of trips. And I thought he really showed a lot of grit to fight on for third. It wasn't threatening the top two, but considering what he was being asked to do, I thought it was an encouraging race for him, and I would think he would move forward off of that, and he drew very well for the race tomorrow. So I think he's the horse to beat. He and Thousand Words are the two horses on our current Derby Watch Top 20 list who are in this race, and Thousand Words really threw in a stinker last time in the San Felipe, and I just don't know what to make of him, because the thing that had been his hallmark leading up to that race was the kind of fight that he always had. He'd get into a dogfight, and you couldn't beat him. We saw that in the Lost Al Futurity. We saw that in the Robert Lewis. And he was just empty in the San Felipe. Now, he's come back to work well, and maybe he just had an off day. But it makes you wonder if he's really that good when a horse runs a race that's just that poor. I'd certainly like to see him bounce back, but it's hard for me to embrace him with any confidence off what I saw last time.
No, fair enough. I was ready to chalk it up too. I am encouraged by the way he's come back to work, and I thought it was encouraging that Baffert is sending him here.
Well, I mean, he needs to find out
where he stands.
Where he stands with the horse, and you know, he needs points. He's just got 20 points from the LaSalle Futurity and the Robert Lewis, 10 each. So he, not that he gets any points tomorrow, but it's a way to find out if he likes that track and then move on to a point-scoring race in 3 weeks. And you don't want to throw him into that race when you've already got potentially Charlatan and Nadal in that race if it's just going to be a waste of time for him. So this is a good trial balloon, I think, to float.
Beyond the more familiar names, anybody with some upside? I know that the Baltus, Twirling Candy, people are interested in seeing direction off of that allowance win. Tayshaun.
Yeah, he ran very well last time, but he had things kind of his own way and made the lead and kept on going. Got a strong buyer figure for the race. I just, having seen his races in previous in the Sham when he was tattooed pretty well by Authentic, and even in the Southwest, I didn't think he ran all that well. He didn't have a great trip, but I would have liked to have seen a little more. I don't know just how good he is off that race. So I'm a little more circumspect with him. The horse in here that intrigues me a little bit is Farmington Road, who I thought ran on well in the Risen Star. He's adding blinkers. Not crazy about the outside draw, but he doesn't appear to have a whole lot of speed anyway, so he can drop back and make a run. And that was certainly an improved performance for him. And he was intended for the Louisiana Derby, but he ended up on the also eligible list and didn't get in. So obviously he's sitting on a race and they want to run him, and this was the next opportunity to at least get him into a race and try and move him along. And I'm sure if he ran well, he too would be strongly considered for the Arkansas Derby. A couple of things also about this race, Steve. The first three in here get automatic berths into the Arkansas Derby. And the winner, as happened last year with the Oaklawn Stakes, when last year was run on Kentucky Derby Day, but the winner gets a berth in, straight into the Preakness. So those are a couple of little things that are little added bonuses regarding this race that people should keep in mind.
Nice. Speaking of added bonuses, the other three-year-old exclusive events, that 7th and 10th race maiden trials, and there is that 4th race, Jay, that's got some familiar horses, especially Blackberry Wine, who has certainly...
He's still a maiden?
He's actually moved on finally, and his third maiden, or however many that he had to clear. But you've also got the California Chrome sibling in here, the gelding now, Fort McHenry. You've got Scabbard, who's kind of lost his way. Eddie Keneally trying to, pull him, back around. Warrior's Map, maiden breaker for Larry Jones, the Liam's Map colt, and Cleon Jones. We got to mention Al Gold, who drew the rail. There's some interesting things going on here. Peter Urton sends Shooter Shoot too. So I wanted people to be aware of that 4th race tomorrow at Oaklawn.
Yeah, no, Shooter Shoot is a horse that I think has the potential to be a pretty decent horse. He's a horse that they've liked all along. Even before his first race, he was pretty well regarded. He ran in a killer maiden race at Del Mar when he made his debut last summer against 8 Rings and Express Train. And then he had a setback later in the summer at Del Mar, and the maiden race at Express Train won. Came back, had a sprint prep, and then runs into Charlatan, but finishes well clear of the rest of the field with a strong buyer figure and came back and matched it last time in his two-turn debut. So I think this horse has some pretty good upside, and I think he's the horse to beat in that race tomorrow.
I've
seen enough of Scabbard.
Yeah, Scabbard has been... Scabbard just went sideways, and see if, you know, about Keneally, second, only a second starter that he has sent out to Oaklawn, but Eddie going well in Florida, and
I'd like to see that horse cut back to one turn, and try the grass.
Well, and when you, you know, that's the beauty. We remind everybody, Jay, when you do the, you know, the post prep recaps along the Derby Watch trail, and when Jay says this horse wants to go 7/8, sit up and take notice, folks, because Jay spots him from a mile out, and is right way more than wrong when it comes to that. Jay, one other thing. I started the week with Ed Fontaine and Evan Hammons because for years I've been keeping this list of the 1989-90-91 era journal launches, and the Racing Times is going to get its moment in the sun. I asked Jay Hovde about his experience. Let everybody know about what it was like for you when you got tabbed to join the Racing Times.
So that was in January of 91 was when I took the position. I was asked by Steve Crist, who was overseeing everything with the launch of the Racing Times, to be the head of the West Coast operations. And, you know, it was an exciting time to work with, you know, someone like Steve and some of the other people that I had long known and admired. And at that time, my short foray into racing, you know, put a few miles on the odometer since then. But the other thing that intrigued me at the time was that I was going to be in a supervisory position. And I thought, you know, if I'm going to think about maybe being an editor down the line or something like that, this might be a good time in my life to dip my toe in the water. And it was really enlightening because I found out from a personal standpoint that I do not have the makeup to be a patient editor. I supervised 20 people, and 18 of them were absolutely wonderful, and the two people who weren't made it just horrendously awful. But it was a good lesson to learn. It's like, no, this is not what you want to do for the rest of your life. And so after the unfortunate demise of the Racing Times about a year plus later, I went back to writing and have stayed as a writer since then, because it's just better for my my mental sanity to do that and leave the supervising to others. But the exciting thing, the more exciting takeaway from that era was knowing that a lot of the things that people now see in the racing form and have become to accept as standard past performance data were all brought forth by the Racing Times. For instance, expanded workouts. You know, the racing form used to only have just four workouts. They weren't ranked like they are now, where you have where it shows you what ranking out of how many who worked at that distance that morning worked. The career box that you see in terms of lifetime record and then the last couple years of wins, first, seconds, and thirds, and earnings, and best buyer figure, and Tomlinson numbers on wet, and horses' record on wet or synthetic or turf, all of that is from Racing Times. Fractions in hundredths of a second, buyer speed figures. I mean, all of that is stuff that the Racing Times brought to the fore that was incorporated into the racing form after the racing form bought the assets of the Racing Times. And so those are some of the things that, you know, I'm really proud to have been part of an organization that advanced the knowledge and data that horse players have going forward to this era that was not part of their arsenal 30 years ago. And that to me is a better takeaway. And all that was stuff that was, you know, spearheaded by Steve and all of us who were working at the Racing Times back then.
It's amazing to me, and I see in this, you know, this current era with the internet, and there's been, you know, so many attempts to innovate and you know, improve, particularly handicapping information, as opposed to, you know, larger endeavors, you know, like publishing a paper. And of course, you know, few people are going to go in that direction these days. But that was an amazing time, Jay. And you know, not only were there the three racing products that I've sort of focused on this week, but Frank DeFord was launching the National around the same time, and there were a couple of other things in that same vein, and it had to be exciting. I mean, to be, you know, a race, either a turf rider or, you know, any kind of a rider at that moment with all those things happening. I mean, Figs Form was innovative, and, you know, Metro Turf also, and that was a form product, but Metro Turf, you know, it's where the closer looks came from. I mean, that was an innovation.
Right. No, there were just a lot of things that happened back then. I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think the National by then had come and gone.
Maybe. 88, 89, yeah.
I'll tell you why I'm almost certain of that. It's because Brad Free went to work for the National.
That's right.
And then Brad came to work for the Racing Times and was the, you know, the West Coast handicapper. And that, you know, because he was a free agent at the time, you know, when that all went down. So, but there was a lot, you know, to your wider point, I mean, it was just an exciting time in terms of, you know, sports writing in general, and certainly it carried over to racing with all the different products that there were out there. But I think it's made, you know, the good thing about it is that it made, in the long run, it made the form better, certainly in terms of the data. And I think people still find the way the PPs are presented in the racing form to be the one that they find most comfortable looking at. And like I said, a lot of the innovations that are in there are things that happened 30 years ago with the Racing Times.
Well, and you know, I've been reading some names off, and there's literally, Jay, it was the who's who, right? I mean, anybody that had a byline with gravitas ended up either, if not being a staffer, a contributor in a lot of, right, to a lot of the things that, I mean, Russ Harris and William Murray,
yep.
Kent Hollingsworth, Girardi, James Quinn.
Yep.
Unbelievable.
No, and then, Fire, obviously.
Yep. That's right. Clem Florio.
Love Clem. There's someone I really miss. He was just a wonderful person.
Everybody
absolutely
speaks glowingly.
Person.
Yep.
Well. Yeah, no, we had it was quite the staff. It was a lot of fun.
Well, I appreciate, and we still have got to get Steve in here and have him talk about it. And there's so many, you know, that could have this conversation. I, somewhere in our archive too, Jay, Brad Free. I think I was at Santa Anita, and I got Brad to, you know, to do a retrospective of his career, and so when you said that about the National, that I got a flashback to that discussion and that conversation. But you know, Brad had, you know, an interesting CV as well. When you went there, you went there from the Daily News?
Correct. I had been the racing writer at the LA Daily News since I had gotten out of college. Had started there as a part-timer when I was still in college, and then worked there full-time for about, I don't know, the totality of it was about 10 years, you know, from the time I was part-time, but as a full-timer for about little over 8 years, and then went to work for the Racing Times. I had already started covering racing on a national basis. My first Derby was in 82, and I actually met Girardi and Steve Crist and a lot of those people in the early, first year or two that I covered the Derby. Randy Moss, I first met back in that era. And Randy at the time, this is just a little anecdote, Randy at the time was doing his own figs. He was a disciple of Fire, and had started as a teenager making his own figs at Oaklawn. And I remember, that was back, this is before Fire figures were published for the masses because the Racing Form didn't right. have them. So, I remember one of the first years I went to the Derby, and I knew Randy at the time. It was a horse that was shipping up from Oaklawn that just had absolutely laid over the field from a fig standpoint. But, nobody else knew that at the time because everybody was just going on, well, that horse doesn't have the class. He hasn't been running at Keeneland, and he just absolutely just blitzed the field and romped. I was like, this is very interesting. Well, I actually started doing figs back then, but then once the, once they started getting published in the, once I went to work for the Racing Times, there was really no need to continue to do them because they were being done by people I respected and trusted. So,
that's a revelation. And we could, instead of looking at the buyers, we could be looking at the privs.
Well, they were based on the buyers. Winners. It was just
follow
along how to do it. It's like looking at a recipe and cooking. It was just
that's right.
telling you how to do it and learning how to do it. So
I love it. Well, and Jay, you and I had an hour plus sit down too. I'll have KC dig that out, and you talk about your career and growing up in Southern California as well. And people would enjoy that. That actually belongs on our best of page. That'll be our KC. That's your weekend project to find the up close and personal.
That'd be a real rainy day.
No, it's fun. It's fun. And in fact, we could even try a trivia question. By the way, everybody, the trivia question from the other day, I keep forgetting to give the answer. I don't know if you heard this, Jay, if you were listening live at that or listened later, but we had the trivia question about the Joe Namath handicap and mm-hmm. what race it became.
It's a filly and mare sprint, right?
Yes, look at you. It absolutely. And what was it?
Gulfstream. Is it mm-hmm. Gulfstream?
Yeah.
So what are the filly and mare sprints at Gulfstream?
Look at you. This is
But
this
I can't
is,
think of what race it would be. But it's I know it's that was the kind of race it was, but I just
That's exactly right. That's it. Look at you cuz I didn't even
Yeah.
I didn't remember the Joe Namath. I had no recollection of it, Jay.
Yeah, that part of it I remember. Because I knew, I would occasionally be, in Namath's company owing to his friendship with Joe Hirsch.
Sure.
And Joe Namath was at Joe Hirsch's, retirement party and things of that nature. But I can't think of what the name of that race is.
It
darn it.
Do you want me to leave it open ended?
I want to know. It's going to make me crazy not knowing.
It's the Honey Fox.
The Honey Fox. Well, that's on the grass. No?
The Honey, is it not? The Sugar Swirl, let me think. The Sugar Swirl.
Sugar Swirl is on the dirt.
Okay. And that was the Shirley Jones.
The Honey Fox. Here, I'm just Googling this because the easiest way to do this. It appears that the Honey Fox is, in fact, the Joe Namath. So I was incorrect that it was a dirt. My addled mind had thought it was a dirt sprint, but obviously it was the polar opposite. It was a turf route.
Well, and they changed both of those around the same time, it seems, the Shirley Jones and the Joe Namath.
Right. Well, there you go.
So it was just fun. So those of you that were wondering, we gave out 10 winners, 10 hats and T-shirts from Fauner Park, and we thank Chris Katulak for offering that up, and then it just sort of came up inadvertently because a horse in Kimari's the fourth dam of Kimari had won the Joe Namath, and it jumped off the page at me, Jay, because it was like the Joe Namath. I had no recollection of it, so it was kind of funny, and it was instantly a fun trivia question, and a lot of people tried to answer it, and I appreciate it. Jay, this was a lot of fun, and we're making our way week by week, and enjoy the holiday weekend, and we'll check in next week.
All right, Steve, thanks so much. I'll talk to you later.
You got it. Jay Pridman, everybody. We're going to stay right here. We got 10 minutes. James Scully standing by, and I think we're going to try to get Eddie in here, too. Oh, is James no longer standing by? Did we lose James?
I'm here.
Okay. No, he is. All right. Casey, give Ed a call and see if you can tie Eddie in, too, and we'll do some ping-ponging with some opinions. James, how was your week?
It was good. It's been good so far. I was busy a little bit working on some features earlier in the week, but definitely been full-scale handicapping yesterday evening and today, and looking forward to these stake races at Oaklawn, a couple of compelling events. How are you doing, Steve?
Good. This was a busy week. I mean, between the Fauner payout on Tuesday, and no matter what you think of what transpired with the DQ, and then the interesting sequence that ended up being chalky at Tampa. Did you partake in either of those?
I did on the Tampa, and I missed that odds-on favorite. I was against him in that second leg, and it was a hideous race, but he gutted it out and beat me right there, Steve.
Well, I think we got Ed in here, too. Ed DeRosa joining us. Eddie?
Hey, what's going on?
Just checking in. Sorry that we kind of got truncated, but we were late. We had a little trouble getting to Hovde this morning and ran long with a couple of things, and I certainly had to take advantage of Janine Sahadi's visit. So I'm sorry that we got about 5-6 minutes to flesh this out. How was your week, Ed? I imagine you participated at Fauner and Tampa.
Yeah, caught the Fauner pick five, so it's been a long time between drinks, but felt good to reel a big one in and hopefully get some momentum, and Tampa ended up chalking out, so not much fun there. I did have that 40-some-to-1 in the second leg of the early pick five that day, but couldn't get another price home for a real moonshot, but it was a good couple of days.
Well, let me ask you a question. In the situation in the opener at Fauner, and I don't want to spend too much time on this. We can maybe do it next week. What did you like about the two? Because the two was not an easy horse to have unless you hit the all button or went, 6-7 deep.
Yeah, I had half the field. I leaned on the two in the next race. Was a big, big single. Probably... in retrospect, because if the 7 had won, who knows what kind of ticket or if the 7 hadn't been taken down, I may have only been in a position to break even. So DQ definitely helped me, but I had used a bunch in that race because I was pretty heavily singled in the horse in the second leg.
Interesting. And that is interesting because the second leg would have been that El Diablo Grand, who I did not necessarily think, it was actually kind of a B for me in terms of, the pace, but it ended up being able to wire. So good job approaching it that way. And listen, you got paid. I mean, that was $8,400 was a very nice number. Good job.
One of those, a lot went right, but we all know in this game a lot can go wrong too, or sometimes it's just one thing goes wrong and, in a pick five, there's little margin for error. So happy to take the W finally.
Well done. James, and we're going to have a little margin ourselves here. We got 4 minutes to get out. Let's hit the features at Oaklawn, the Oaklawn Stake.
Yeah, the Oaklawn Stake. It's still a win and you're in for the Preakness, switching spots with the Arkansas Derby. I'm against 1,000 words. who has disappointed in his first two races, just didn't go on this year at three so far. Could still be a nice horse down the road for Baffert, but I'm against him. And Basin, I didn't like how Basin weakened last time. Some concerns about the trip from the rail going a mile and an eighth. I like Farmington Road. And granted, a post 12 isn't ideal, but I do think he can receive a much better trip than he did last time when he was a rallying fourth in the first division of the Risen Star. He was too far back early. He traveled ridiculously wide on both turns that day. I like the addition of blinkers from Todd Pletcher, who's won the Arkansas Derby five times. He knows how to ship horses into Oakland Park. Martin Garcia. And the thing I do like, he had a pace tracking trip two starts back when he broke his mane at the Tampa Bay Downs. I think Farmington Road can get a better trip in mid-pack and prove best in the stretch.
Ed?
I do like Basin. I'm just kind of sticking to the plan where I figured he'd need one in the Rebel. He got it. Now he gets the mound and eighth here on the date he was targeting anyway. So I do like him. I agree with James wholeheartedly on Thousand Words. Horses like that are a big reason I love using speed ratings, performance figures, et cetera. He just doesn't stack up with this group, you know, let alone maybe even some better ones. So he's fadeable at the price for sure. Digital interests me a bit at a bigger price. And then I thought Coach Ba, you know, at 20 to 1, I think you could do worse, kind of ran on evenly in the Rebel. But, you know, we've seen some of these horses come back at Oaklawn and on the three-year-old trail that sometimes they're able to stick around as the distances get longer, and he's one I'm going to pepper in a little bit at a big price.
Why don't you go on and give us your Oaklawn Mile take?
Tom Stetat all the way for me. Just super consistent. No problem with Alstall off the layoff. I wanted to make a real hard case for Mr. Money, but he's just not quite as fast as Tom Stetat anyway. Hasn't been as consistent. And a little more questions for me with him off the layoff than Tom Stetat. Improbable, I want nothing to do with. I wish he had a better post because I wouldn't have liked him anyway. If he wins from out there, he's just a different horse than anything we've seen from him in his previous starts in his career. So I'm all in on Tom Stetat.
James.
I concur. I like Tom Stetat. I'm really thrilled that he has come back to race at age 7. You know, had a lot of long layoffs in his career, but really, I thought, peaked last fall. Two huge races. He's won at the mile distance before, and I'm glad the money burning improbable is in the field. Hopefully, they'll keep his price from being too short. I mean, it's going to be lower than 3 to 1, but he's the most likely winner. If I'm playing vertical exotics, I will throw Bankit in there. He has a bunch of triple-digit late pace ratings. Was probably regressed last time a little bit, but can run better tomorrow.
How about James' spot play anywhere else on the card?
Yeah, definitely. Race number 10 is a main special weight that a lot of light bettors will be looking to spread in that race. But I do think that number 12, Hunt the Front, is the most likely winner in there, Steve. I like his trip. He ran on opening day on a speed favor and track. He kept contact with the field, rallied to be a good second. I don't know what Channing Hill was doing last time, dropping way, way, way out of it. Love the addition of Joel Rosario. I thought General Trev came back and ran last time. That was a strong maiden race. And I think he's the most likely winner in this field. And with a 1-for-31 trainer, his 6-to-1 morning line odds might be in the vicinity. So Hunt the Front, the horse I'll be looking to use in the 10th race.
Eddie?
I like a horse today at Oaklawn in the nightcap, Ready and Waiting. Steve Asmussen legs up Tyler Bays. Not sure what to make of Ricardo not getting aboard, but the pedigree is just gangbusters for early running and going to be a heavy lean for me at 5-to-1 morning line to close out the multi-race wagers there today.
I'm shocked that anybody want to contribute something to the Queen Elizabeth at Randwick or, you know?
Windfire does have our Australian contingent on it, so we'll leave it to them. But, around-the-clock action, we're not stopping.
Well, you know, and I've been telling everybody about most of this stuff at Randwick, but I do want to mention the Western Australia Turf Club, they got the $300,000 their own derby. And as Dick Powell said the other day, I think last week, you know, there's like six or seven derbies. It's the craziest thing. There's 10 horses. I think six or seven of them are fillies. And crazy. And then there's a couple of geldings. It's mostly fillies in the WATC Derby. This goes at 12:50 Pacific time, 12:50 a.m. Saturday morning at Ascot, which is Australia D. And then there's
12:50
those
Pacific?
Yeah.
Oh,
yes.
Man. Yeah, I don't think I'll make that one.
4 a.m. essentially, East Coast. Guys, have a great weekend. Stay safe. Happy Easter, everybody.
Thank you, Steve.
Yeah, happy Easter weekend. Happy Passover. Thanks, Steve.
James underscore Scully 111, EJXD2, Ed DeRosa, Jay Pridman, Janine Sahadi, Rick Amerley, Nick Tamaro, and Jay Hovde. There you go. There's your weekend preview. Good luck, everybody. I'll do Oaklawn tomorrow. Maybe Gus has got something for later today. I haven't checked yet. If it is, it'll be at the website. Thanks to Case. Back in the studio. Happy Easter, Case. And we'll talk to you Monday at the races here on SiriusXM.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio.
Have you heard about the new handicapping and betting app that is sweeping the nation? It's called First Bet, and it puts the power of AI-assisted handicapping, seamless wagering, and live HD video in the palm of your hand. Thousands of bettors have already made First Bet their way to handicap, bet, and watch more than 300 of the world's top tracks. Isn't it time for you to join them? And when you give First Bet a try today, you can cash in on a huge welcome bonus. Sign up with promo code SPORTOFKINGS, all one word, and you will get $10 just for joining, as well as a 10% rebate, up to $500 for your first 30 days. With that much free cash on the line, what do you have to lose? Get started at first.com/bet. That's number1st.com/bet. And don't forget promo code SPORTOFKINGS when you sign up. And if you already have an ExpressBet account, you're way ahead of the game. Simply log into FirstBet using your username and password, and you're off to the races.
Up to 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with FirstBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.